This is an ABC podcast.
This is Nijan Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinidar Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Bula to our Nijan Footy listeners in Fiji who have their second international test of 2024 coming up against Georgia, a team they beat in the World Cup last year. And welcome everyone to Nijan Footy, the number one spot to keep across our incredible Pacifica athletes in the Rugby League and Rugby Union Worlds. My name's Tinero Aruna, and usually Sam Wykes is the man next to me, but all that travelling around the islands has caught up to him. So he's off sick, my poor mate. I hope you're, if you are listening, Sammy, I hope you're feeling better and I hope we cheer you up. So stepping in again for another week is someone who has represented Cronulla, Penrith and the Cook Islands in league, as well as the Highlanders and Western Sydney Rams in union, my little cuz, Tupo Supuanga.
Kia rana, koutou katoa. Good to be back to you. 18th man.
Yeah.
18th man off the bench.
Quick story, last night, Sammy, he messages me about, what was it, about 9 p.m. He's like, man, I've had the flu the last couple of days. I said, oh, look, we can get the impact player on, you know, tomorrow. We can call Toops in. And he's like, no, it's all good. I'll be all right. I'll just smash some medicine down there, my cold and flu tablets, and I'll be sweet. And then I rock up this morning, and then you show up.
Well, I got the call off the bench at 1:17 a.m. this morning. So off the pine and straight into it, man.
Thanks. He must have been struggling if he's messaging you at 1:17 a.m.
Oh, man. He's lucky that I went to the toilet because I saw the ticks and I thought, oh, you know what? I might just have to step up for this one. But it's good to be back, T, and looking forward to chatting all around the State of Origin men's. And also, we get to talk about Salah and her State of Origin women's team last night. Can't wait to have a debrief around the Super Rugby Grand Final with Big Kef, talks like Kifu. And then lastly, we've got the culture shock with you. You're up this week, T, so looking forward to that one.
Well, you mentioned Salah. Unfortunately, Salah won't be joining us. I think she's maybe, you know, not celebrated. What's the opposite of celebrating?
Yeah,
dwelling.
Debriefing. She's debriefing about the team, about, you know, what happened last night and yeah, she's going to come back stronger.
But I will catch up with her next Friday and, you know, ask about her emotions and how she's overcome some of those feelings of losing the decider, the first ever decider, by the way. But great work to Queensland. I'm looking forward to ripping into the show. Let's get it on.
Nissan Bulavinaka, my name is Kempisi Maafu. You're listening to Nijan Footy Podcast. Hope you enjoy.
Yes, so we have the footy news where we will cover rugby league and rugby union. Mate, feeling mixed emotions this week after two intense Origin games over the past two nights. So let's rip into these games. I'll start with the men's now. Jeez, it's good to be a Blues, New South Wales Welshman.
Sure is.
And you know, after game one, there were some worrying signs. I'm like, man, please don't let this be a three in a row for Queensland after game two. But the boys, you know, I'm a Blues man, so the boys went down to Melbourne. Over 90,000 people were there watching the game, and they created history at halftime, leading 34-0. Unbelievable. You know, the team that they went out there, they, you know, just went out there with intent. Final score was 38-18, but still 34 at halftime, mate. That is crazy. Now, if you could put the Blues performance and sum it up in one word, Toops, what word are you giving me?
Relentless.
Relentless?
Relentless, brother. Man, they were so relentless the other night. Just their intent to come in and just absolutely bash the Queenslanders. You could tell that they were relentless in everything they did, from their kick chase, from their carries, from their, you know, their third man in the tackles. You can tell they were desperate.
Yeah, I love how a few of them played with a bit of a chip on their shoulder. You know, copping some media attention over the last few weeks and just went out there and owned the game. One word that sums up the Blues performance for me was, I mentioned intent. So definitely intent, the way they came out, the way they carried with intent, the way that they, you know, went out and trying to smash the Queenslanders. But the other one was guided. I think on the back of that go forward, on the back of that, you know, possession with the ball, the amount of ball they had attacking the try line, they needed a couple players to be able to transition that possession into points.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I think the guy was Mitchell Moses.
Yeah, and I think it comes, when you're talking about, you know, the word guided, it comes with selection, right? So, you know, selecting the right people to guide the right people, that's super important. And Mitchell Moses is definitely the right person or the right seven to take them through to the next series. So, man, what a game he had.
Yeah, well, he was, I think he only played one game before game one. So he wasn't quite ready for that game one selection. But, geez, he come out in game two and put a performance on. He had four try assists. The way that he was kicking the ball as well, getting the New South Wales out of their own end. You know, there were times where Queensland were catching the ball in their own 10, you know, close to their own try line. And then the New South Wales Blues chase was just unbelievable.
Yeah, and so, it was crazy to think, you're talking about the kick, he was kicking it from 30 to 40. So to be able to kick it back into their 10, it's such a hard hard carry to come out of your own yardage line when you've got a blue wall that's ready to get you. The other thing I noticed here as well around Mitchell Moses, he was able to unlock Jerome Luai.
Yep.
And when you're able to unlock Jerome Luai, that left edge was just unbelievable.
Yeah, well, you take that responsibility of guiding the team away from Jerome Luai, and he can just play that sixth position where when he demands the ball, you give him the ball because he sees space, he sees something, and he's able to create havoc. Similar to how he plays with Penrith Panthers, you know, Nathan Cleary, he controls the ruck, controls the gameplay, but then when Jerome Luai links up with him, you know, that's where points come. So Jerome had a huge game as well. I thought he played well. What was your biggest difference from game one and game two in your view?
Yeah, I mentioned the word before, selection. And when you get the selection right, it definitely makes a big difference on combinations, on how people feel in terms of their confidence. And they just selected the right people this time. You had Moses and you had Moses there. You had Connor Watson come off the bench. And then they picked Dylan Edwards at the back. And those three guys were able to unlock a lot of other players, especially around the forward pack.
Man, you missed one of the biggest differences. They played with 13 men for most of the game.
Oh, man.
Man, it helps having playing with 13 men and not 12 like game one. But you mentioned selections, and I think you missed one of the biggest players who I think made a huge impact in this game, and that was their left center, Latrell Mitchell. You know, that aura that he has around him, that, you know, he is a superstar, he is one of the best in our game, and he went out there and just owned the State of Origin Game 2 match in Melbourne. You know, the way that he touched his carries, he had that try assist where he had that offload to Bizza. He even scored that try, but you could see when he went and dived on that ball, when he goes in for his try, he gets up, goes to the crowd, but then the boys around him, you had Bizza bringing his energy, pointing at him. You had Jerome Luai running over, Critter running over. They all just jump all over Latrell, and they pretty much acknowledging him, saying, "You are him. You are him, Latrell Mitchell."
He just brings that presence and takes away a lot of confidence from Queensland. I mean, unfortunately for Valentine Holmes, you know, you've got to go up against one of the most, I guess, iconic players in rugby league now. And just to add to the pressure of Origin, you've got to also take on, you know, arguably, you know, one of the top five best players on his day in the competition. So well done to him.
I love that their edges, the strike weapon. So you're on the left, you had Angus Crichton, Latrell Mitchell, and on the right, you had Liam Martin and Stephen Crichton.
Mm.
Jeez, what a team. But my Nesian players of this match. Now, I've got two. The first one was the man in the middle, Payne Haas.
Ooh.
Now, big Payne, the way that he played the platform, the way that he carried and carried 3-4 to Queensland defenders, you know, and getting up, getting that quick play of the ball, he ran for the second most metres out of all the players in this game with 193 metres. He had four offloads and 31 tackles here to make as well, making zero misses.
Man. And on top of that, I think he had roughly around 58 minutes on the park too. So playing in the middle was the hardest position to play and at Origin. And he's definitely worth the $1 million that he's on right now.
You can you can see that he could have easily stayed on the pitch and played 80 minutes. Just the energy, the intent that he was running with. But then they had to find a way to inject Spencer Linu. And Spencer, come on, makes a break straight off the kickoff run. He was unbelievable when he came on. But Payne Haas, he was one. Now the second player, Mynesian player of this match, was that left winger, Brian To'o. Now, not because only he scored two tries, but more so the way that he returns the ball. So, and he had to catch a few high kicks. So he catches it. He returns the ball. He ended up making 176 meters and five tackle breaks in State of Origin. But they're underestimated. The way that their outside backs get them out, you know, Bizza has to take that first or second hit where Queensland defensive line, thus set, they're ready to bash him. So he had to take that carry. And on the back of that, he finished two unbelievable tries.
15 metres away in front of the right, upright at the city end of the ground. Now Robson comes to the left. Murray plays out the back to Luai. Then to Latrell Mitchell. Away to Brian To'o. Uh-oh, To'o. He's able to score in the corner. It's 10-0 New South Wales. Beautifully worked from right to left. Brian To'o's over for the Blues. New South Wales 10, Queensland 0. 18 minutes gone, Luke Lewis.
So 34-0 at halftime. What do you think the coaches are saying to their teams, Toots?
I mean, if I'm the Blues, they're probably saying, you know,
put the fiddle on the metal.
Yeah, put the metal to the pedal. Is that it? Put the metal to the pedal.
Put the pedal to the metal.
Oh man, yeah, I definitely think that. You know, Madge would have came in halftime and was like, let's really choke them out here. So, and something that they can build off for game three with Billy, you just got to build for game three. He's saying, mate, we got to build some confidence here. We need to stop the bleeding.
Yeah, look, I think whatever was said at halftime, you know, Billy Slater did make a bit of a difference. You know, Queensland did finish the second half better. You know, they had three tries from Samoan players, Jeremiah Nanai, Hamiso Tabuai-Fido, and Murray Taulangi. I believe the Blues only scored the one try in the second half with Dylan Edwards. Now, you know, it does. A lot of ex-players do say, oh, look, let's... you have to try and finish the game strong so it leads into the next game. Mate, the next game's 3 weeks away.
Yeah.
You know, whether you finish the game strong or not, you know, you still know at halftime it was 34-0 to the Blues.
Yeah.
They come out strong.
Wasn't too many happy former Queensland players as well, speaking across different platforms around their team. So we'll see how they come across in the next.
I'm really looking forward to the next game. I don't think there'll be much changes for the Blues, if any. You know, it's always tough to go to Brisbane, play Queensland in a Game 3 decider. So I've got a bet, actually, with Jacob Maguire, and he works for Nija Daily on ABC. And the losing team, so I go New South Wales, he goes Queensland. The loser of the series has to wear the opposite jersey on their show.
Okay.
So last year...
Don't let us down.
No, last year we had the same bet. And I actually wore the Queensland jersey in Phoenician footy. And guess who we had on our show that episode? It was your brother, Lima.
Oh,
I was like, bro, get this jersey off me. So I'm praying that the Blues win so I don't have to wear a Queensland jersey. But, you know, we'll see in a few weeks. Now, speaking of Queensland, the girls got the job done. They won this State of Origin Game 3 decider, first ever Game 3 decider in the women's State of Origin, and they won this game 22-6. Now, geez, what a series. You know, the Blues coming out in Game 1, really dominating that game, and you think that they had all the confidence for Game 2 to seal it. And there was a moment where they pretty much had it in the bag, but then Queensland fought back in Game 2. They kicked their field goal to win the game, and then they take it to Game 3. And then Game 3, Queensland played this game like the Blues played...
Game 1.
The men's Blues played Game 2.
Oh, yeah.
Out and dominated 22-6. Now, wet conditions in Townsville, similar to Game 2 when they played in Newcastle, and Queensland won in that game as well. Very, very wet conditions. I thought my standout player, and she... scored a try as well. She had five tackle breaks, ran for 135 metres, was Ivania Politi.
Queensland's with a scrum feed, 12 away from the New South Wales line. Aiken gets a pass away. Politi straight through. And has she got the ball down? Yes, rolls over, plants the ball down. First blood, Queensland.
Cool thing about Ivania, she was on Nijin Footy only 2 to 3 weeks ago. So if you want to listen to that episode, you can search Nijin Footy wherever you get your podcasts. She is an unbelievable talent, a great woman, and she speaks really, really, really well. So happy, really happy for her. Even though I'm a New South Wales Blues man, I'm actually happy that she won. She got the MVP of this game. So well done, Ivania. What were your thoughts, Toots, on this game?
Oh, I think it sounds... silly, but I felt like Queensland won it in the first 12 minutes. They came out with intention to hurt them. The other thing is they had good ball position, which impacted the way they got around the field. The other thing is Blues were super ill-disciplined when it came to their carries. Lots of drop balls, they're pushing the passes, and that led on for the rest of the rest of the games. I think, you know, when you start the game well, you know, especially in the rain, like I know, you know, no one wants to make the rain as an excuse, or even being up in a Queensland state, up in Townsville, but that definitely, they played to the conditions in the weekend for sure. So when you're putting all those factors together, it's always hard in a decider to come back for New South Wales.
Now, we mentioned Sala Tongatuki. She can't join us today, but geez, when she came on, she made a huge difference. Did you see her when she came on, Toops?
Man, I was sitting down with my daughter, who's potentially a future New South Wales Blues woman.
Oh, of course she is. Yeah. How old is she?
Oh, she's 87, but we get it going now. I was like, hey. I was telling her, oh, you see that girl there? It's like, you're going to be like her one day. And that was Sala. So it was awesome to see Sala come off the bench. You know, she was super, super physical in her tackles. Her carries were strong. I was actually surprised. Like, oh, man, is that Sala?
Mate, she didn't make Team of the Year last year for no reason, bro. She is a beast.
Yeah, man. Well done, Sala. You were amazing last night. Didn't come away with the win, but definitely made an impact on the game.
Something you should be proud of, Sala. I'm looking forward to hearing your story or your experience this time next week. Any other players stand out for you?
The other one, which I was quite surprised about the fact that you gave me, is Tasman Rapana.
Yes.
She was so physical. Like she was honestly manhandling the Blues, which was quite interesting to see. But you could tell that she wanted to outplay her opposite number, and I felt like she did. You mentioned that she's Jordan Rapana's sister,
yes,
is that right?
The fullback, the Cook Island fullback for the Canberra Raiders. Yes, Tassie is Cook Island, and yeah, she's Geordie's sister.
Oh man, well, it would be interesting to hear what kind of backyard footies they would have had back in the days. But she definitely stood out to me in the weekend. On Wednesday, knowing that every time she carried the ball, she was super dominant.
She scored a try at the end of the game, I think, too, eh?
Yeah, she was so good. Like, honestly, I was super impressed with that game. Also, like, just the fitness, the quality of conditioning that everybody had, the girls had, I think is amazing to see for the future generations. And, you know, I know this was the first game three of a State of Origin series, but, you know, it's only going to get better over the next couple of years.
Beautiful. Well, congratulations to the Queensland women's team. Let's head up to Brisbane for the men's State of Origin Game 3 and, you know, let the best team win. Now, off to some NRL. I just want to touch on my round of this weekend coming. Now, I think our ex-team, the Sharkies, you know, they had a real good start to the season, the Cronulla Sharks did, and they've just lost a bit of form there. And they are coming up against the Bulldogs, who have found some form, and not many people would have thought, you know, they would be doing this well this early. So I think it's going to be the game of the round, Cronulla versus Bulldogs. Just quickly, you know, in the Cronulla team, we've got Cook Islander Kale Iro playing in the centre. We've got Sione Katoa and also Ronaldo Molitalo on the wing for the Cronulla Sharks. Now on the Bulldogs.
It's also, just quickly, it's also set for Talakai's 100th
NRL game.
Yeah.
Yeah, congratulations to Big Sefa. I'll be sure to message him later and congratulate him on the 100th NRL game. It's a huge achievement. How many NRL games did you end up playing?
25. A quarter of what Sheffield played. So, I mean, I take that to the grave. But he's got an awesome story because he started off with playing NRL, then he had a couple of years break, and then now to round his career out, you know, it's a true testament of, staying in the fight.
Well, I played, it was 69 in total, but I actually played 70. But on my last game for the Cronulla Sharks, our old head coach, Flanagan, I sat on the bench the whole 80 minutes and didn't get on the field.
Oh, it does not count.
So it doesn't count.
Oh,
so
man.
It was 69 in total. But I think it's going to be a huge match. In the Bulldogs, we've got their man, Jarrell Skelton, who absolutely put one of the biggest hits of the season.
He's
so
a rugby
far.
Union convert too. Sammy's not too happy with
yes,
that.
He's so on the wing for the Bulldogs. Mentioned him last Monday on Nijan Footy. And we've also got the Fijian big man, Viliami Kikau, who will take on the Cronulla Sharks. So a huge game to look forward to. Oh, that was a bit there for Rugby League Toots. Now let's head over to rugby. What do you got for me?
Yeah, in rugby union, straight off the bat, obviously the Wallabies squad was announced last week. We had 13 new squad members. The awesome thing about that, T, we had two new players that were Nijan footy players, Isaac Kalia and David Filiwai from the Melbourne Rebels.
Do you know what islands they're from?
Both Samoan.
Both Samoan?
Yeah, but, you know, I'll just claim them anyway. Oh, yeah, yeah, Samoan. You play the Samoan, you know, it's my half Samoan side coming out. So well done to those two boys. Also, it's a good opportunity for Noah Lolosio, another Nijan footy player, to really round out being the first five for the next couple of years. So it's going to be interesting to see how the squad gets selected leading to the British Irish Tour next year and then 2027 here in Australia, the Rugby World Cup.
What are your thoughts on the Wallabies not selecting players that are going to rugby league next year? We've seen their 10? Or their four, the one guy on the Gold Coast?
The 10, yep.
So we've seen him.
Carter Gordon,
he's heading to the Gold Coast next season, not being selected. We've seen Mark Nawanganitawase not getting selected. What are your thoughts on that, the Wallabies?
Yeah, I think what Joe Smith, the head coach, has done is the right decision. And the reason being is because, you know, at the end of the day, you're building to win something. And if you're not going to... if you're not winning it this year and it's actually you're supposed to win it in 2 years or 3 years' time, then you need to build towards that. And if they're not in the plans or if they're not in even in the same code in those 2 or 3 years' time, I think you've just got to move on, build into somebody else and take your eggs out of one basket and put it in the other.
So you think if they had the World Cup at the end of this, the World Cup was at the end of this year, they'd be selected in the Wallabies, even though they're going to rugby league?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Because you're trying to win a World Cup or you're trying to win a British and Irish Lions tour. Unfortunately, you know, those two tours in 2 and 3 years' time. So hopefully Noah Lolosio gets to make, a big impression for the Wallabies camp.
It makes sense because this year we've seen Joseph Suoli'i being selected for the Blues in Game 1.
Yep.
Even though he only played about 8 minutes because the man got sent off, but he is going to rugby union after this season. And
he'll probably be in the Wallaby squad next year, so it's definitely right.
Well, you know, Madge, same coach, sort of theory. Yeah, Madge wanting to win this year. He doesn't care about next year. He doesn't care about the year after. He wants to win the Origin Series this year, so that's why, you know, he wanted Suoli'i in there, hoping that he can get them off to a good start in Game 1, even though he's going to union next year. So you bring up a good point.
Yeah, and just off the back of the Wallabies talk coming up, it's awesome to see that they've got a double header next week on July the 6th against Wales, alongside the women's Wallabies team against Fijiana, so that would be good. It's the international window right now, so a bunch of different international teams playing over the next couple of weeks. We've got Samoa squad taking on Italy on Thursday night in Apia, so July the 5th will be interesting to see how they select their team. A bunch of different players come from Australia, New Zealand and overseas, so like I said again, they're building towards the future.
Any inside news? You know, do you know who's getting selected? Any cousins? I know you're half Samoan. You got any cousins in there?
They're trying to get Josh Ioane to pledge towards them for the 2027 World Cup. So he's got to play. He's had his 3-year stand down so far. And so they're working towards trying to get him to come across.
Josh Ioane, is he brothers to the Ioane brothers?
Nah, he's not brothers to the Ioane brothers, but he was kind of like, he's played for the All Blacks.
Oh, yeah.
But he's half Samoan, half Maoli. But, you know, good 10, especially in the Pacific nations. You know, they're diamond dozers. So that's a bit of an inside scoop around Manu Samoa.
Beautiful. And if you are just tuning in, remember you are listening to Nijin Footy Fridays, and you're here with T and Toops. Toops, you got any other rugby news for us?
Yeah, just quickly on Fiji. I mean, Fijians are being awesome over the park, whether you're playing or whether you're in the coaching staff. Former Fijian coach Simon Rovalui, he's now the director of rugby for the Waratahs. So that's huge.
That is massive. So you're saying that a Fijian is the director, head of the director of the Waratahs. So the director, their role was to, direct rugby.
Yeah.
But he's the one who looks after which coach is selected, his coaching staff, the players, pretty much control of the whole organization.
Pretty much. So all the coach does, they select the team, they coach the team. Whereas the rugby director, so for Saimone, he gets to recruit the players. He gets to choose who the coaches, the coaching staff. He has a big impact in, and because he's played in Sydney before, he was raised in Australia. He's gonna, I guess, have those ties to, I guess, a lot of different people within the country. So that's probably a big news on.
Bro, I love that representation, that Nijin representation at higher, like above, on those boards, in those rooms.
Not just rugby players, eh? Like also like in influential positions. So this is probably, man, one of the biggest, because Waratahs not on paper, but they're the most successful team.
When the Waratahs are doing well, usually Wallabies are doing well.
Yep. That's why this appointment was super strategic and important for the country. So
Simone, let's move on. There's plenty more rugby chat with Totai soon, but we are going to take you to the deep end in Culture Shock.
Culture Shock.
This is our segment where we learn about our fellow Pacific Islands, and I treated us to some Tuvalu facts last week, T. So you're up, no pressure.
Yes, I remember the Tuvalu where everyone gathered on the airstrip.
Yeah.
The whole country or the whole village, the whole island came on in the afternoon to enjoy their time together.
So what do you got for us today?
Well, I am going to take you to the Mariana Islands only because they just won the most gold medals in the Micronesian Games that was held this week where Sammy was.
Okay.
Great work to the Mariana Islands. Hopefully, over there in the Micronesian Games, my mate Sammy didn't catch the flu and everyone else has recovered.
Yeah.
But, I'm taking you to Mariana Islands. So, just to give you a quick background, the Mariana Islands are made up of a total of 15 beautiful islands, like the Cook Islands, which extend northward from the island of Guam, making it the largest and most populous island in the chain. What we will talk about, Toops, is the Mariana Trench. So my culture shock is a place called the Challenger Deep, which is known as the deepest point known on Earth and is located beneath the Western Pacific Ocean in the southern end of the Mariana Trench. So to paint the picture, it is 36,070 feet deep, which is 10,994 meters. Let me paint an even bigger picture for you, Tubes. You put Mount Everest, the tallest mountain on Earth, inside the Mariana Trench, and you will still have a mile of water, of ocean, above its highest peak.
That's pretty deep.
Let me paint an even better picture. You put 35 Empire State Buildings on top of one another, and then you put it in that ocean. And the ocean, the Mariana Trench, will still be covering 35 Empire State Buildings. So because it's incredibly deep, sound travels very far and stays clear. This helps scientists learn about how many animals talk underwater and create better equipment for exploring the deep sea.
Mate, I'll tell you what, this conspiracy series Conspiracy series. Conspiracy series because of the theories.
Far out.
Conspiracy theories, yes.
Must be a conspiracy theory from how deep that is.
Well, some say it is harder to travel to the deepest parts of our ocean than it is to travel to space. So there's my culture shock. The Mariana Trench, the deepest sea on Earth. Conspiracy. Let's move on to rugby union expert to cover all the rugby union news. Our man, Totai Kefu, the big Kefs.
The rugby union preview.
Kefu. Totai Kefu.
With Totai Kefu.
Joining us every week to chat all things rugby union is Wallaby, Queensland Reds, and Ikalitahi legend, Totai Kefu. Big Kefs, how's it going, brother?
I'm well. Good morning, boys. Great to hear the Blues get a, just to make it a little bit competitive, eh?
Well, you beat me to it. I said, I was just having that thought of, your energy's a bit lower this morning. You know, usually you come in a bit smiling and jumping and
chest
happy.
Is a bit higher, you know.
The chin's a bit down now, and I guess the Blues won game two. Let's send it to Brisbane in Origin this side of how good.
Yeah, I might try and grab a ticket for that game. But yeah, the Blues, hey, the final of the Super Rugby, I think the best team won.
Yeah.
You know, overall, they've been the most consistent. Them and the Hurricanes, I think, have been the most consistent. The Chiefs outplayed the Hurricanes in the semis, but I think all in all, the Blues deserved winners of the Super Rugby. What a fantastic transformation they've gone through. We talked about this every week, what Vern Cotter's done there. And seriously, in poor conditions, Blues just really played the same way they have all year, haven't they?
Yep. I guess for the Chiefs, you know, their backs weren't able to, you know, be unleashed because of the weather. We talked about it last week. Do you think they had a massive factor on their performance or potentially maybe getting a chance to win?
Toops, you hit the nail on the head, mate. They just couldn't, you know, the Blues took territory away from them, possession. Chiefs were, the time that they did try and play, you know, poor execution. It was, the weather was horrible. It wasn't made for their attacking style. And discipline, you know, I think the penalty count was about 9-2 at half time. So every time they try to get some traction, Chiefs just gave away some silly penalties. But look, you kind of know what's coming at you when you're playing the Blues.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't stop them. Just couldn't stop them. In that first half, I think the territory was about 70% to the Blues.
Yeah, it was. It was.
On the back of unbelievable forward play, really a set piece that was on point, and just those ball carries through the middle. Like, I think Blues are number one in meters after contact. Just a leg drive, and that's Vern Cotter. That's his blueprint. He's brought that to the Blues side, so they're very deserved winners.
Just a random question. After the game, did you manage to watch any of the celebrations or the interviews from any of the boys?
A few of them, yeah, a few. I know Akira won his last game. He's heading off to Kintetsu in Japan. And you know, one of the things I really did enjoy is especially Plummer mentioned a lot of the Blues players in the past, that they're a part of this, and I thought that was really good recognition.
Yeah, you're so right. 20 years is a long time, and a lot of those players have unfortunately been through a couple of wooden spoons over the years. Just speaking of the Ioane brothers, Rico mentioned something saying that he puts that above winning a World Cup. What are your thoughts on that statement?
Wow, that's a massive statement.
Yeah, it's pretty big, but you know, it's all over the news at the moment. And
he hasn't
whatnot.
Won one, though.
He
yet.
Hasn't won one, oh, okay. But so, he did say for him, winning the Super Rugby title was bigger than winning a World Cup trophy. So,
well, I think you got to win both before you can probably make a comment like that.
True.
He might change his mind, actually, next time he wins a World Cup. But look, I totally understand where he's coming from. And a lot of people actually say that about their club grand finals. And the simple reason is because you spend so much time with these Super Rugby teams, they start preparation in September, October, and then they go through the whole season together, and the season finishes around July. So you're 6 to 8 months together, living in each other's pockets, traveling together on buses, on planes. You're pretty, and if you're on big contracts, like long contracts, you're growing up with each other. You're brothers, literally. And I think that's where he's coming from, is that you do so much together, winning a final or finals like these, is you're doing it with family members, brothers.
Yeah, I agree. I think he more meant, you know, he got to win that cup with his brother in his last Super Rugby game, and also represent his city that he got to grow up in front of, you know, in at home in Auckland. You know, what better feeling? He's probably full of emotions as well. So I think they just took that small sentence and kind of ran with it.
he was outstanding. And that, you know, Clark and Lamb, I thought what Vern has been able to transform Lamb from a, he was a winger, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was a winger at the Hurricanes a couple of years ago, from what I remember, into a inside centre. And using him
as a battering ram, pretty much. Which
I thought, and he was outstanding as well. So those three players in the back line, outstanding. The back row, Papali'i and Oani and Satutu, outstanding. But the forward pack in general, pretty much laid the platform for the win.
Yeah, definitely a dominant performance by the Blues, and I'm sure that the Chiefs will have to recoup and go again next year. So, you know, onwards and upwards for the Chiefs, but well done to the Blues. On to Fijian news. Obviously, they lost to the Barbarians. Plenty of challenges on the way, big gifts. What do you make of their performance?
Yeah, I watched the replay. Look, I thought they were okay. You know, it's always hard. First game of the season is always a bit of a trial and error. There's some really good performances. I think they move on to, is it Georgia?
Yep.
In Georgia. Geez, that's a fascinating place that is. Anyway, you walk down the middle of the street in Georgia compared to the middle of the street in Suva. Not only are the conditions different, but just the people, the attitude is totally poles apart. Yep. I mean, Fiji's all about, you know, they're laughing, they're giggling. You walk down the middle of the street of Georgia, no one smiles.
Oh, you get no love in Georgia.
No one's laughing. And you go through their history and you can tell why no one's laughing.
Yeah. Well, definitely interesting experiences on the way for the Fijians. Good building block for them, right? Going up against Georgia during the international window.
It is. They go. So they got Georgia, and I think they go up to. I'm just scrolling through my little diary here. I think they go into the Pacific Nations Cup, which is that series with Samoa and Tonga. Tonga have got two games against what? They got a game against Italy coming up, and then they got a game against Georgia as well. I think Georgia head out to the Pacific Islands. Because I think the Wallabies play Georgia as well. So these are all just kind of warm-up games I say warm-up games, but they are test matches, so teams would be taking them bloody seriously. So you definitely want to win, but I think most of the teams won't be hitting their straps until the second or third game in.
Yeah, it's definitely something that you build on towards around the international test. A lot of teams, you know, they're trying to, you know, brush off the cobwebs and get new combinations, because, you know, some teams are getting new players released and some teams don't release the other players. So it'll be interesting to see during this international window for the 15s aside.
Toops, just on that point, there's still the final to go in the French division top 14. So there are still a lot of players haven't been released back to I know Tonga are still missing quite a big chunk of their players, but the final is on this weekend. Toulouse versus Bordeaux. You know, a shout out to some of the Tongan boys, some of my Tongan boys, Ben Tamafuna, Adam Coleman. Peter Arkia playing in that final on Saturday, that'll be huge.
Yeah.
Going for Bordeaux, Toulouse have won too many championships in the last couple of years. So I think once that's the last.
I think they've got an unlimited salary cap. I think that's why.
That certainly helps, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking of some of those guys that you've coached from the Ekalitahi team. I mean, in terms of international test, I guess do you miss being the coach of that team, or do you miss being around the, because it's obviously international window right now, you're still missing it?
Yeah, definitely. I think I mentioned this on one of the earlier podcasts. I don't miss this. I love the no stress, no deadlines.
Yeah.
You know, because when you're coaching international rugby, you're always worried about something. There's always something to do. I don't miss that part of it, but I really do miss just the connections and the relationships with the players. You know, players that I haven't seen all year. They're a good bunch of boys, good lads. And I miss that team environment, the banter, you know, the banter between the, you know, it starts off with the clubs. I remember sitting at the back of the bus once and the Moana boys were copping a lot of heat because they were around second last on the table from the other board. But then the guys giving him a bit of heat were boys from the Welsh team. They were second last as well. So you miss those exchanges for sure.
Just quickly, what is one of the biggest challenges as an international head coach, you know, preparing for these upcoming games?
Oh, mate, getting everyone to camp on time and dealing with the clubs. The clubs are usually really good. And we know that there's that big final coming up. So those players, you don't want to tap them on the shoulder too much around test match preparations and travel. And we let them finish their season off, especially if it's a final. Let them concentrate on that first, and then, you know, switch your mindset over to international rugby. But that's the hardest thing, just flying players in. I remember before the last World Cup, we needed everyone in on a Monday for our first camp leading into the World Cup. Now, we had players, we stuffed up the flights for some reason or another. Mate, so we were all supposed to be there on Monday. We didn't have players turning up to the following Wednesday, so a week and a half. And then we had those players had one day into our first game, which was against Australia, right?
Yeah.
So huge. There was there was a couple of boys from France that took them a week to get to Tonga. So they missed their flight for some reason. Then they stayed in Paris for a couple of days. Then they got to Auckland. Then there was no flight out of Auckland to Tonga for 3 or 4 days. So those kind of things creep up on you, but you kind of learn to deal with them. Crazy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, those are the challenges as a head coach, right? And I'm sure you're, as much as you miss it, you're probably definitely enjoying not having those challenges. Just off the back of that, have you heard any news around the Tonga team at the moment? Anything coming out of, I guess, the Tonga's inside scoop?
They assemble on Monday. The staff get in today, I think. So they'll have their first connection meeting today, from what I hear. So no issues so far. Not to say that there will be some that will come up, but they picked a pretty good squad from what I've seen. And they're staffing. They've got a lot of ex players in their staff, which is fantastic. So players like Kurt Morath's doing the kicking and the skills. Joe Tui now is involved with the line out.
Yeah, I saw Nili Latu's in there, so I'm sure there's going to be full contact every training.
Yeah, he will be. He's high on his standards.
He sure is.
He'll whip them into shape pretty quickly, I reckon.
Oh, man, it'll be, especially all those new guys, they're going to get a good welcome to international footy from Nili. I'm just taking it over to the Wallaby squad, you know, a team with a bunch of different debutants, a couple of full of Indonesian faces as well. What are your thoughts on the first team that Joe Schmidt's named?
I think it's a good team. I totally agree with leaving those players out who are overseas at the moment. and also those players who are heading to league. So I agree with that. I had lunch with them on Wednesday, actually, and I got to meet a lot of the guys who I've been big fans of. But, yeah, look, there's some unbelievable players in that. They're finding their way through how they're going to play over the next week or so. And they play, I think they play Wales next week. Good to see some players like, I didn't know much about that Isaac Kalia.
Yeah, the young prop from Melbourne.
Yeah, unbelievable. So I didn't know much. It was good to chat to him. Good to see Lucan back. I think he's our premier lock. Daniela Dubow, I don't think he's had the best Super Rugby season, but they know how good he is. And look, that coaching group that Joe Schmidt's put together is unbelievable. There's a scrum coach there called Mike Cron, who I've known for a long time. He is the guru. He's a game changer for us, and I think I've mentioned this. He's going to be unbelievable for the boys. He's made an impact already.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's awesome. And I think I noticed that Noah Lola-Seal's back in the mix too. Must be, I guess from your perspective, do you think that this young man is the 10 for the future for the Wallabies?
Yes, I think so. And the good thing about Noah, level head, he's the type of fly half that is needed for Test match rugby. And they've got a young fella underneath him, Tom Liner, who's also in that kind of same mould, a real traditional kind of 5'8 that can play territory, but also kick their goals. And so he's very good at that. Look, he's been through a lot. He's had his ups and downs through his career and plays for a bloody good, the best the Brumbies, who have been very successful.
Mm.
Most successful Australian team, so I think he'll grow even further.
Yeah, well, it's definitely going to be an interesting next couple of years for the Wallabies. Awesome to see that, you know, they're investing into a young Nation first five Noah Lola-Seal for the future. Kefs, we always appreciate your footy tips, your expertise. But if you're meeting up with Joe Schmidt for lunch, does that mean you're going to be part of the coaching staff for the future then?
No.
Come on, man, give us the inside scoop.
No. To tell you the truth, I'm heading back to Japan to coach. So I'll leave probably in the next couple of months. But Joe just invited a couple of ex-Wallabies to come in for lunch. I was in there watching a bit of training anyway. So I think he's really big on that connection to the past. Especially with players who have worn the jersey before. So not only myself, Andrew Slack was in there, Paul McLean, George Smith was in there as well. So a lot of the players actually didn't know any of us except for George Smith. So we had to put up the YouTube clips, I think, for definitely Paul McLean and Andrew Slack. But it was good to just – and there's a good little vibe and buzz happening around the team. I think we can really build something positive moving towards not only this campaign, but Lions next year and the World Cup the year after that.
I love how you just sneak the old, I'm going to Japan to coach, and then just switch topics. So we don't have enough time to touch on that one now, but next week we'll cover it with Sammy. Appreciate you coming on, Big Kefs.
No worries, boys. Keep up the good work.
Kia ora, my name is Kiana Takairangi, and you are listening to Nation Footy.
Quiet, boys and girls. It's Professor Paulo.
So if you're new to the show, this is where we compete.
Ooh.
Myself and Toops, we have Professor Paulo on, and he shares a question. The first to answer the question correctly will get a point, and we keep a score. So at the end of the season, the loser has to buy a fancy lunch. Now, I won last week when I got the swimmers...
I just hope that Professor Paulo gives us a simple question. He's given us a riddle inside that. So I'm feeling lucky today. So hopefully I can get this up for Sammy.
Well, the score is 8 to Sam and 6.5 to me.
Oh, let's go.
Let's go.
Let's do it.
With the Olympics coming up next month and all the excitement and buzz happening in Paris, which Polynesian country will be hosting the surf contest at the Olympics?
T. I'm going to say, because it's connected to the French, I'll say Tahiti.
Ooh. Tahiti's got good surf. Why do you say Tahiti? Because it's connected to the French. That's it.
Yeah.
Did you look at the answer before?
Nah. We'll see what the answer is.
What's the answer?
The surfing will take place at Taupo, and the country is Tahiti.
Oh, okay, okay.
Brad, you know our papa's part Tahitian, so.
Yeah, I know. I might have to text Chef, hey, stop giving the answers over to T before.
That puts me closer. Oh, I'm on 7.5 now. Beautiful. Let's head over to our knockout tipping comp.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Knockout tipping time.
So each week we pick one team and, you know, from rugby league or rugby union, and you can't pick that team again. Yes, again, we keep a score. And thanks to my cows, Toops, I've extended the lead once again. And my pick of the Blues was spot on. I was going to mention to Totai Kefu. I was like, man, if he put a bet on every, you know, pick that he's picked this season so far, he would no longer have to join us on Knees and Footy.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, I need to stop doing those emotional picks first and foremost because that's what's getting me. But in terms of rugby, Super Rugby is all done for 2024, but it's international season, which is great. So there's basically tests every week for the next couple of months. The first one we've got to tip is the game next week between Georgia and Fiji.
I'll let you do the honors, seeing as I'm taking the lead 24-19. So you're on 19, I'm on 24. Sammy is 19. So we won't flip a coin. We'll just get straight into it. I'll let you pick first, Fiji or Georgia.
Well, I'm going to go Georgia.
Why Georgia?
Sammy will appreciate this, and he knows rugby union, because Georgia, they've got all their players back. They're a great scrumming and mauling team. Fiji don't have all their players back from France right now, so I'm pretty sure that should get us over the line.
What I do know about our Nijan teams is all you need is a week or two in camp and you're flying. So the boys, they played against the Barbarians. It was a tough game for them, but I reckon that they've come in stronger and they'll be giving it to Georgia. So I'll go with Fiji.
All right, we'll see how we go.
So in league, we've picked 16 teams, so we're down to our last team, the one team we haven't picked all year, and you are left with, what are you left with? You're left with the Eels.
Yeah, on behalf of Sammy, and I have to pick the Eels this week, and I think they're going to get it.
Eels to beat the Knights. Yeah, Rick, if I had to tip, I'd tip the
especially
Knights.
After,
I mean, sorry, the Eels.
Especially after the other night, Mitchell Moses.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to get that one for Big Sammy.
So you're on the Eels, and I have to pick the Cowboys to beat the Panthers. It'll be a tough one.
Be a very tough one.
But, yeah, you never know. That's the only team that I can pick is the Cowboys. Well, Toots, thanks again for stepping in for my sick mate, Sammy Wikes. And that's us done for another Nijan Footy Fridays. Remember, you can listen back to our Monday and Friday shows. Just search for Nijan Footy wherever you get your podcasts. Ka kite.
Meitake mata.
This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.